FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars,
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, did you take the chorus stop?
Transformers!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, episode number 233, recorded, February 11th, 2017. I am your host, Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Megamus.
What's up?
Proto Man.
Yo.
And Sergio Garcia.
Hello, everyone.
Tonight, we're going to talk about some things that are... That pretty much impacts every one of us. We've talked about it off and on over the last few years of the show. We're going to hit a little bit more on it tonight because it's something that every collector deals with at one point or another, whether it be from family, friends, just going through a store, what have you. It's collector stereotypes and misconceptions. And how we deal with them, how other people tend to deal with them, and we're going to talk about how to perceive this stuff, you know, and how many different ways there are out there. I know Brett named off like five or six a while ago before the show went live. Brett, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, first of all, the topic came to us from one of our listeners, Mustafa Akbar. He's one that came up with this topic, and I thought, you know what? It's a good idea. Now, he goes to a lot of he's big at New York Comic Con and some of the big venues. So these stereotypes, they don't just hit, you know, Transformers collectors. They hit, you know, your Star Wars collectors, your Joe collectors, your comic book collectors, you know, blah, blah, blah. And what I want to do is I wanted to hit what you guys thought your top five stereotypes were. And what I wanted to do is I actually wanted to go around the room and just not go into great detail, but just list your five top. Everyone does it. Then we'll go back around and we'll either defunct them or prove them. And I think it'd be a good idea.
Is it five, like just five, or do they have to be like ranked? So like the number one.
Look, Mr. Youngie here. All right. I'm just going to go with five. Just give us five. All right.
Yeah.
In no order whatsoever.
Well, doesn't matter anymore.
Before he does that, we're going to talk about that, that topic tonight. And also later on, a little subtopic we're going to talk about tonight. And it's actually something that's crossed my mind because I'm kind of getting up there. And I know Brett's been thinking about it for the last 20 years. Are you too old to collect? I play on PlayStation 4 all the time. Sergio knows. And I've been in games where people will hear my game chat and they're like, and they see my gamer tag, which is WeirdWolf1975. You know, they'll say like 1975. Wow, you're old. I'm like, yes, yeah, but I still play games. What?
Now here's the thing:
I'm playing game for you as a zygote boy.
At what point you go, you little whippersnappers? Yeah. You do that, you're old.
No, what's really bad is whenever I get called old, and by the end of the match, I'm owning their ass. So, you know.
But the funny part is that that topic too came from Mustafa. It was one of these things, we got to talking about it, and he was just like, well, you know, one of the stereotypes is that you are, you know, you're too old to play with that. You're too old to do this, which we'll get into that. And we were like, that's another topic in and of itself. So, I mean, kudos to him for coming up with these.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do is I was going to start off with my top five. Now, I'm going to put the how do I say this? I'm just going to put it out there that this isn't directed at anyone. This is not meant to upset anyone or to belittle anyone. This is simple stereotypes that, and when you hear them, you're going to go, yeah, I've heard that before. It's the typical ones.
Or I've experienced that before.
or I've experienced it, or if, maybe you have it.
If you've been a collector for any amount of time, you're going to come across at least one of these things or one talk about.
I'm going to hit my, let's see, because I had a few. One. All right. I'm going to hit a couple of them. All right. I'm just going to do a couple. Because I think the problem is that there's a few of them that a lot of us are going to hit right off the bat. And the first one is, and it's one that I did notice and we actually hit on it, is, being shy, awkward, antisocial. Whether you mean to be antisocial or whatever, just by being shy, not wanting to talk, not being outward. You know, definitely not like me. I don't have a problem talking. I don't give a crap. But how many times have we talked about, do you remember when we would do the, right before the convention shows, right before BotCon, TFCon, whatever, and we'd give our little tips and tricks and this. We always talked about, hey, just be outgoing. Talk. Just talk. Because we all, believe it or not, even though everyone's got different religions, different backgrounds, this, that, and the other, when you go to this convention, you do have one thing in common. Your goofy love for these stupid toys. There you go. That's something to build on. So that was my first one. My second one was, and I'm going to lump this all together with...
Why don't we all each do one? Because if we,
if you do one and yeah, go around,
because if we each, if you list them all and everything, some of us might run out of something to say.
Well, that's what I was afraid of. I was only going to do two, but we could just do one.
Yeah, we'll do one, and then you said list five. There's four of us here. Then we'll each try to agree on one more.
Okay. So mine was just being shy, awkward, the antisocial. You know, the little flower in the corner type.
Wallflower central.
Because Sergio was so, you know, ambiguous, or not ambiguous, just so boisterous, wanted to talk and everything, you're going to be last. So, Duran, go ahead.
Well, another one that comes to mind, is that it's something I've experienced whenever you go into a store, you get, not necessarily in Toys R Us, because you know that older people shopping for toys is not unusual in there. But you go to Walmart, Target, Meijer, any of those stores like that, and you're standing in the toy aisle, and you're going through the pegs of carded figures, or you're like, ooh, you know, you find that one you're looking for, you pick it up, yeah. Well, people think you're some kind of pedophile, or not necessarily that, but yeah, they give you the looks. They think you're weird, you know, because here's this grown person just going crazy about toys, you know.
And they think you're up to something.
They think you're up to something other. Why would a grown man want to collect toys, or a grown woman? You know, it's just. you know, it's something that, you know, it's always in the back of your mind whenever you're there. But as, even as, you know, I've been collecting as an adult since 99. So what's 18, 19 years now that I've been collecting as an adult. And I've kind of grown numb, as it were, to those people that look at me, or even the cashier. I've even got to the point now where cashiers, and I've noticed it more of, as of recent years, cashiers don't ask if it's for the for your kids anymore. Most of the time they say, "Is so this is for you or is this for your kids?" You know, they automatically know it's for you. The other night I was with Orson of Captured Prey. We were at Target, and he was buying a Titan Returns figure. And I was in line behind him, and the cashier was an elderly man, and he rings it across the scanner. That's the only thing he was getting. He rings it across the scanner and looks up at him and says, "So you're a collector?" He says, "Well, have you had a chance to inspect this figure yet?"
Well, two things. And I'm going to really quickly interject on that. Two things. One, we could go into something else we talked about, or it could be the fact that Orson was going, "Mine, mine, mine," the whole time.
No, so no, actually, he and I were...
That might have given a clue to it.
He and I were talking about something else, you know, as we were walking up. But just the cashier, I mean, as he rang it across the scanner and put it in the bag, or getting ready to put it in the bag, he says, "So you're a collector. Have you had a chance to inspect this figure so that it's... what you're
probably
what you're
overheard
expecting?"
Your conversation prior
we weren't
to...
talking about toys before that. We was actually talking about something that shall not be
stereotype
mentioned. Yes,
there
we were not talking about toys. We were talking about something that shall not be named on this show, but but no,
I'd rather not know.
Probably rather not know.
Unless you're part of the Patreon, then you'll know.
Maybe. You know, that's a good segue.
TFYLP.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Somewhere there.
Right there. Yeah. Right there. Right there. Yeah. The Patreon. We have a Patreon going on at patreon.com/TFYLP. If you love what we do here at TFYLP, you know, give us a little money each month. You know, it can be a dollar, $100, whatever floats your boat. And, it helps keep the lights on, helps us upgrade software whenever we can. You know.
Also, if you hate what we do, give us money and we'll change.
Oh, that's one way to look at it.
I mean, why not?
Yeah, but you know, for all of those who have donated and continue to donate to us each month, I want to, as the founder of this show, thank you profoundly for your continued support of the show and what we do here. Without what you're doing, we would not be here right now, because, you know, a lot of you may know, you know, a couple months ago almost had to shut it down because we just couldn't keep going. You know, I mean, it's expensive, server fees, new software, all kinds of stuff, and it's really rough sometimes. But you know, we're here, we're live, and I think we're looking good. So I know I am, because I'm
styling.
I am so sexy, and you know what, all you can do is just sit back and drink it in, man.
So to nail down what you were talking about, what was your particular stereotype? Are you going to hit
that you're,
and
that
say
you're
it was
weird.
Orson, or are you going to say it was you, Mr. Sexy?
Basically that we collectors are strange and basically too old to be doing this, which, you know, we can talk about that a little bit later on. But
right, but we're trying to nail this down particularly. You're saying it was because of your age?
It's just generally looked upon as weird because you're not a child and you're buying toys, and it's obviously for yourself. You know, we think that is normal, because we're collectors, you know, it's what we do. But you know, to the outside person who isn't a collector, and they don't typically collect things like that, you know, they may have other hobbies and other interests, they don't think about going to stores and looking at toys and looking for that store exclusive or next release. They don't understand why we do what we do. So they just see our behavior in public as strange.
Okay. All right. Daniel?
Oh, man, that's a loaded one.
And Daniel, that was loaded?
Oh, it's loaded. It's loaded like a gun. It's a little different today now. It's a little different today, I find. But I know that, like, when I was in high school, and this is, like, my high school timeline was 1995 to 2000, during that Beast Wars era, I found that because I was someone who was – quite a jock. I was very into sports. Did not wear that on my shoulder in high school. But when I came home, this was the beginning of the internet. You know, internet wasn't very common thing back then. I lived it. And so the one stereotype that I always found is when people found out, especially like if anyone who came to my house that was buddies with me when I used to play hockey, what a surprise, the Canadian used to play hockey. When I used to play hockey, any of the guys would come by my house, they'd see my wall of Transformers. And keep in mind, it was 1997, so it was mostly G1, G2, and Beast Wars. And they'd just see this huge wall of Transformers, and they'd be like, so this is your little brother's room? You know, like they didn't know that it was my room. And I'd be like, no, this is my room. And they, you know, it was funny because there was the ones that were like, they thought it was kind of weird, and then there was the ones that, you know, nostalgia'd out over it. Like, dude, I fucking had that as a kid. You know, like they loved it. And, but it always, the stereotype I always felt was, is that you could only do one or the other. You could only be a guy who does sports and goes out and has fun with, you know, with the ladies. You know, well, that's the funny thing is back then I found that was so much the case. Not so much now, but I know, especially in the 90s, there was such a huge dichotomy there where it was just like, you could only be one. You can't be both. But I mean, that'll go into later on with our later topic about being an older collector and stuff, because it also kind of relates to the house that I lived in. But we'll get into that afterwards.
That creepy Adams family house up on the hill.
Yeah, well, that, I lived in a
the one on Mockingbird Lane.
69 Mockingbird.
All right, Sergio. Come on. Wow us. Wow us. Wow, that was so good. Though.
Come on, little tyke. Come on, you can do it.
I don't know. I think, let's see. We already kind of mentioned being lonely and awkward. I guess we could just talk like immature, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of piggybacks off of what Daniel said. Okay. But I know it's like, usually like people that I know, like my friends and family, like they're okay with me collecting. Like the only time that I get like stuff for it, they're just like, you know, poking fun. They don't mean any harm at it. But sometimes they'll playfully call me a child. Like, they'll be like, are you still like 10 or something?
Well, you are, but that's the
thing is, especially that people need to recognize. And like I say, that's why I mentioned more, this was an issue for me more in the mid 90s than it was today. Is because I think that as the timeline progresses and that age group is getting older and older, the people who are judging it are, you know, I don't want to say dying off, that's too morbid, but they're slowly becoming smaller numbers because those individuals
are becoming the minority. How's that?
Yeah, well, because they don't understand, because it's gone to the point now that guys in their late 30s and even a small smidge of them in the early 40s were the ones that grew up on this stuff. Right. If you date back, if you were a guy collecting, let's say, you know, 1979 Star Wars Kenner going into Superpowers and Secret Wars of Marvel and DC, you know, that first, I want to say, bubble of toy collecting that really exploded. I don't want to go all the way back to Joe.
Rock on.
But point being is, you know, so those guys are now like, you know, the majority of an age group, 30s and 40s. So the stereotype is fizzling more and more as it progresses, because people the understand
collect these. Yeah,
or Hot Wheels. Well, that's just it. But I think that the understanding is becoming more and more now that it's normal. It's become normalized because of also pop culture recently. I said, it's so much has changed in the past 10 years.
Right. And I actually wanted to hit on that. And I was going to throw up this little and now's a good time because you said that. Even though we're still doing our stereotypes, this goes in with it nicely. Is what do you guys think about the media, and social standards on collecting and this is a wonderful word because I don't find it offensive. Is you know the nice nerddom. If you look at it, in my opinion. It's changed. It really did. When I was growing up, one of the things that I did was I went out and bought wonderful mail order catalog. You guys will love this. I built my first computer. You'll love that. And oh my God, people were just like, he's a nerd. He did this, that, and the other, whatever. And now, I mean, look at social media. Look at one of the biggest shows with The Big Bang Theory. Look at people are more intellectual than they were in the 70s and 80s. They look more towards that. So collecting, in my opinion, is more of a, okay, I can see that. It's more of a nostalgia. It's kind of neat, you know.
Well,
it's kind of nerdy. It's kind of nice. I think it's more of an attraction than it was in the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s. What do you guys think?
I think a term that would best describe that, and I've heard it before in so many different realms, as it were, but geek is chic. Mm-hmm. At one point in time, being a geek was a negative connotation, a geek or a nerd, you know, at one point in time, a geek and a nerd were two different things, but I'm starting to think over the last decade or so, those terms are becoming interchangeable, and in a sense that it's more acceptable too.
At one point in time, like it was
neither was being like it, acceptable.
I almost feel like it's going to be non-existent because it's gotten to the point now where the stuff that used to be associated with those terms are dissolving. Where it's the point is going to see a superhero movie is a giant pop culture norm, right, that everyone will do regardless of
that
the fact
when it exploded.
A better example, I shouldn't even have used a superhero movie. Going to see a Star Trek movie today or a Star Wars movie today has become a social norm. No, even the new J.J. Abrams movies of Star Trek.
Yeah, but I'll go back and even say when the first animated movie came out.
Well, no, but what I'm trying – I'll explain the connection here.
You had your hoodie over, you know, and you didn't tell me when you went and saw it.
This was back in 85. What I'm trying to say is that today you'll have large sums of people of any walk of life, of any kind of social standing – going to see a Star Trek movie, going to see a Star Wars movie, where if you would have rolled back that time 20 years ago, 15 years ago, episode one, special editions of the original trilogy, or even Star Trek Generations, First Contact, those were strictly reserved to an audience. And even the numbers say it for, say, right, like the Star Trek movies, strictly reserved for an audience of geeks, again, of that creed and that title. You fast forward today – and same product, same title, same concept, same IP.
I like that.
Now a whole wider audience because of the public. And the funny thing is, what you mentioned before about Big Bang Theory is that I find that while it's geekdom has become marketable, there's tons of shows about collecting, there's tons of shows about video games or about toys. There's collector intervention. There's My Greatest Collection. There's, you know, even going to Pawn Stars and stuff. You watch Pawn Stars, most of it is geek-related stuff. It's related to, you know, they're usually appraising a comic book or an old tin figure or some kind.
Even electronics is still, depending on what it is. So, yes, you can get into that genre, yes.
And well, it's the same thing.
even past guest Travis Landry, whole purpose, one of the main purposes of him being on like Antiques Alley on PBS was because of his knowledge of toys.
Well,
there's an increasing need for somebody that knows about toys and value therein.
Real quick, Daniel, just to prove a point to what you were saying, is think about when Star Wars came out or Empire Strikes Back came out, or even Return of the Jedi. And now look at Episode 1, and people are staying in line a week before the opening day or whatever, intense, waiting to be the first one to see it. That wasn't the way it was before.
But to cut you off, though, the numbers, though, like I said, the numbers, especially Episode 1, is as financially as a success it was, pales in comparison to the numbers that Episode 7 generated. Because while Episode 1 was still grounded, even though, oh my God, no Star Wars movie from any, it was still grounded in, oh, you're going to see a Star Wars movie? What are you, a dork? Like, it's just, it still had that. Yeah, granted, there was a proportion of audience that went to see it regardless of it. Of its past geek relations, but I think Episode 7, there's no way anyone could have sat down and really done a social experiment. But I mean, if you really sat down and the kind of people that went to see Episode 1 measured the kind of people that went to see Episode 7, and especially I feel that Episode 1 probably had more children than Episode 7 did, and that's something that's very predominant.
That had to do with the time frame between the two, because you
of
had
course,
next,
that's
you
why
had next it
has,
generation has saying. Look, this is what I experienced. I want you, my sibling, my son or daughter, whatever, to experience it. And that's why I think you had more. But the simple fact that all this stuff was never even thought about before.
Well, that goes to what I was saying, like the timeline of things that have changed over the years. One thing that, like, I want to just get back to what you were saying about Big Bang Theory is that while again, they like marketing geekdom because it's so profitable today. I mean, from anything from a loot crates to all kinds of stuff, geek stuff is so profitable today. But I find that even though it's profitable today and companies are so quick to market to us and make shows about it, I still feel that they do that and they still, though, push out publicly that it's something that is dorky by the marketeers. Now, the marketeers might be 60-year-old old frumpy guys in the networks and stuff, but the point being is that when you look at a Big Bang Theory, they're still making it that, hey, the guys playing Mario Kart are dorks and science experts and antisocial.
Right. They're
and
still making fun of them.
You know?
Yes.
And it's the same thing. You would watch Pawn Stars, and sometimes they'd go to see an expert, and there still is that light jab if it's a toy collector or if it's something like – it's slowly diminishing, but I have seen it a lot of times, especially with what's it called there? Storage Wars. Storage Wars, a lot of times when they go to see that eccentric guy who's focused on that one thing that they specifically found, there seems to always be that jab of, wow, you really like X? You're kind of weird because of Y, you know? So it still exists, but – and it's ironic considering that the majority of the viewers and the purpose of that show is aimed at that market. But at the same time, there still is that jab. Primarily a reason why a lot of people who don't like Big Bang Theory are actual geeks and fan like nerds, and the people who do enjoy Big Bang Theory are the people who are outside of that bubble looking in.
Well, look at some of the shows that are really taking off, like the Netflix original series and everything. You got Stranger Things, you got Voltron, you know, Legendary Defender. I mean, those things are huge now, and it's got this whole geek culture pumping into it.
Because it has a built-in culture. Number one, it has a built-in culture of fans from before. It has a built-in culture of people who have vague memories of it, but now because Netflix is the thing. Again, the most powerful buying force is not us. It's the masses that don't know any better. I'd hate to say it, but I'm pretty sure most people that saw Episode 7 or most people that – and I guarantee most people that saw any of the Michael Bay movies, we only make a fraction compared to the majority. Mm-hmm. That actually go to see it, and that's
well. I mean,
that's
how much have we talked about the fact that the only reason that we're getting the toys that we're getting now is because of the Babe movies?
Yeah, of course.
That's the only reason, because of the money that was pumped back into this. That's the only reason you're getting this masterpiece series, any of it.
People
you know?
I've known my entire life, friends, family members, never had any kind of contact with Transformers of any kind of fictional form or anything. But when that first Bay movie came out, they went to
Everybody's
see it.
Everybody's a fan.
You know, all of a sudden but that's just it. Same thing. Like my mother, you know, would never like know anything about X-Men. But yet now there's this slew of Marvel movies that, because it's popularly, you know, there's no stereotype behind it. She doesn't have to read a comic book. She doesn't have to watch a cartoon. So now that stereotype is something she has, something that's more acceptable, the live action movie. So that's an access point for them. And all of a sudden now even your mom knows who Iron Man is and that he's Tony Stark. And it's like, wow, like, you know, it's a whole different world. That's why I feel that the stereotype thing has changed so much in the past couple of years, that I feel that even 5-10 years from now, the term geek will not even – it won't exist for this kind of stuff. It won't exist in the relation of pop culture. It'll exist more in the realm of getting picked on at school and bullying and stuff like that.
Let me add another little nuance on the top five. And I'll say this. And I'll throw it out there. The stereotype that all collectors are male and not female
changed also in the past 10 years. And I will agree with you 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I will agree with you. When the Transformer fandom, and I'll even give a shout out to her, when the Transformer fandom had like one for every 200, which was like Trickster or Windy. Or Windy. Like literally, when you would go to a BotCon and out of 200 guys, it'd be one girl. Yeah, that was the minority. But past 10 years, and we could all account for it, things have changed. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Absolutely. A lot of things have changed.
Well, I mean, it's something that, you know, this show, whenever we first started off as TFYLP, was there were two female members of this show. And, you know, they're still around thereabouts, Mirai Baby and Natsume Ryu. Natsume, you can still hear her on the intro of the show, on the audio version. She does the promo at the beginning for CapturedPrey.com and Mega Toy Fan, both of our sponsors. Check them out over there on that side of the screen. Yeah, it's all mirrored on my screen, so I'm or here.
If you do it that way, you're good.
Yeah, that, do it that way. Yeah.
Looking at the feed, that's why.
You know, I remember going to conventions. My very first convention was, I believe, OTFCC 04 or 05. It's
04.
It's all fuzzy back then.
05 would be...
No, that's right. That's right. It would have been first BotCon. So it would have been 04.
The new, yeah. Regime.
Yeah, so OTFCC 04 was my very, very first convention. And I remember going there, and about the only females that you saw there were generally wives of the male collectors. There was a few females, but not very many. And then it seemed like over the next few years at BotCon, it just like, I mean, it's pretty much an even mix now. I mean, I would think, you know.
07 was the turning point for obvious reasons. I saw it firsthand. Not just doing BotCons, but TFCons, being on the forefront of two shows consistently every year and seeing it. 07 was a major turning point. Major turning point. Just in not just of women at the shows, but just numbers in general. But just it was a major turning point.
My girlfriend, she, you know, she's not a collector per se, even though she has a nice little collection of werewolves going already. It's, you know, but, you know, she isn't afraid to have Autobot and Decepticon logos all over her vehicle now. She's got...
Oh, like, it's common as hell now.
Yeah, I mean...
used to be... If you saw a car that had an Autobot sticker back in the 90s, early 2000s, he was a fan. And I mean a fan like we are. Today, if I see an Autobot logo on a guy's car in Walmart's parking lot, it's probably just a dude. You know what I mean? Who just like, you know, he just kind of has a passing enjoyment because it's pop culture. Mm-hmm. Same thing. You'll bump into a guy, you know, in the street and he's wearing a Star Wars shirt. He's a fan, but he's in a fan in the passive way. But because pop culture is such a part of society now that it's in the same way where you used to back in the day, you'd see a Nike shirt. You know what I mean? And or you'd wear like, you know, FUBU. Or again, I'm going to the 90s here because that's my generation. But you know what I mean? Like it's just where people would wear those kind of, you know, walking logo on your chest. Today, now it's, you know, video games or it's, you know, whatever we're all wearing. So like he's wearing a Puma shirt, Sergio. That's what you know. No offense, Sergio, but that's like something someone would have been wearing in like early 2000. You know what I mean? Where today now it'll be a guy with a Rebel logo on his chest, and he might not even really be associated with Star Wars or really have a deep, deep love for it, but he thinks it's cool. I like the movies. Episode 7 was hype, yo. You know, so that's kind of how it.
And another thing that you see more out in the open now, and I see more and more often, are tats, geek related tattoos.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, in the Transformers fandom, you know, you go to any convention, you're going to see at least five or six guys pass by you with Autobot and Decepticon insignias on them. You know, I've seen some really, really nice ones, you know, full comic art all up and down the arm.
Oh God, there was a guy at BotCon 2008. I forget his name. He was just head to toe, just had like everything Transformers on his body.
I guess that could be a stereotype in itself too. As I know, there's a couple people who are huge fans of something, but they don't collect just because collecting isn't for everybody. But that doesn't necessarily mean that if they don't collect, that they're not huge fans.
With any major media property, like Transformers especially, Transformers was grounded in toys initially. But today, you could be just a comic book reader. You could be just a moviegoer. You could be just a toy collector. There's some guys that only enjoy the aspect of G1 and G1 extension toy collecting, Masterpiece and Classics, but don't really enjoy the movies or the current cartoon product or the current comic product. And I know plenty that just divulge in that one thing. It's, you know, or just they enjoy the video game aspect of it.
Well,
you know,
you're talking about something with so many medias.
Yeah, well, but
there's so many different, you know, fingers that one of them grabs you. Like you said, you know, there's a guy that goes with tattoos. But doesn't like the toys, doesn't like this. That, you know, maybe he liked the comics, and that's why he got them. Or maybe he liked the vintage, you know, the G1 cartoons. Or heaven forbid, he's, you know, a Bayhead and loves the new movies. Who knows? You never know.
It exists. I did a convention recently in Toronto, and that age demographic of 12 to 15 year olds were buying up my Bay toys. Granted, they weren't expensive either, so maybe that also kind of greased the wheels. But that's that market.
Yeah,
you
are, like you said, greasing the wheels to get them going. And we've said this before. You know, all those Bay haters. You get the new fandom in, and they get all the Bay toys and all the movie toys, and then they say, "Hey, I wonder what came before." And then they go back. You
well,
know?
Especially,
and I'm not saying that's going to happen to everyone. But it keeps it going.
Yeah, I was going to add on to that. So last BotCon or two BotCons ago, my boss was selling off the bulk of his Movie One collection. And he was telling me that those went the quickest. Of all the items that he took to that BotCon, the first movie stuff sold the quickest. And he told me that most of the people buying them were either my age or younger, which made sense because I was 11 when the 07 movie came out.
Well, there you go. That's the demographic.
You know, to me, I don't consider it my G1. I don't really like collecting the Bay toys. But to other people, that could have been their first exposure to the brand.
Of course.
And to them, that's, you know, nostalgic.
And it's the most permeated right now. Just like for us back in the day, G1 was the most permeated. Everywhere you could go, lunch buckets, night lights, doorbell ringers, curtains.
Anything.
It's the same thing now, you know, with the Bay movie toys. And I think Hasbro is starting to really catch on to that, the current regime of Hasbro, because, you know, there for a long time, you know, we might have got a roll of wrapping paper or something. Now we're starting to see curtains and lunch buckets and stuff like that again. You know, the brand is getting out there. But
man, even there's a lot of stuff recently that I've been seeing that like aren't toys, just like general merchandise. Like you get your weird stuff, you know, like aside from your lunch pails and stuff. The other day it was the company that I bought my keyboard from, Razer. They sell hard shell laptop cases with engraved Autobot and Decepticon logos, and they're all like officially licensed stuff. And I've just been seeing a lot of that recently. all this like non-toy, non-clothing related items.
As crazy as it sounds, 10 years ago, man, as crazy as it sounds, when the first Bay movie came out, it was already starting that. There was already fishing lines, tackle boxes, video game skins and stuff that were Bay movie based. And this is 2007. There was already the lunchbox was starting, plushies, pillowcases, blankets. The first time we ever saw a movie Optimus Prime was a leaked towel of it was a towel from a towel company of the Bay Optimus Prime, like in its final design, not just the control art. I mean, a lot of that stuff was, it started with the Bay movies where it really went mainstream. And it's just, you know, that's when you get to that point, that's when it really is just, it's everywhere. You know?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of gone in a decline.
I look at G1 and G1 had a lot of stuff. It really did. Let's be honest. Anything past Star Wars, when they found out, hey, we can make money off this crap from the movie. Toys sell. Merchandise sell. You throw Star Wars on anything and it'll sell. So
it's true.
Hasbro kind of knew that. And that's why we get the Transformers G1 soap dish or the Transformers G1 shampoo. You know,
tents, blankets, pillowcases,
any of that stuff. The difference
zipper, I'm looking, I have my section of G1 merch, zippers, pencil cases. Like there's so much of soap bottles.
The difference is back in the 80s, most people didn't collect that stuff. So now you get these guys that are like after the movie, they were like, oh, I'm going to collect all this stuff. And it's good and bad, which, Daniel, we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. What's the worst thing you could do is collect something that says it's a collectible. Hello? Mm. You know, don't do that.
Well, you know, I think we've kind of beat this particular aspect of it to death, but something I do want to add, and it's a perspective on it in a scale of time, and that, you know, in talking with my mom, and to a lesser extent, my dad, you know, they grew up. My dad was born not long after the Great Depression, right around that era. And so he grew up with virtually nothing, you know, in Eastern Kentucky. My mom, the same way. You know, they didn't have toys. They didn't have, you know, it was all manual labor. All the kids, my dad came from an extremely large family. So, you know, whenever he was a kid, it wasn't so much going out and playing with a toy. It was go out and do your chores, you know, help take care of the farm, help survive. But as time went on, you get up into the 50s and 60s, people are starting to have kids. The parents are starting to have more disposable income. The kids aren't required to actually do physical labor to help, you know, the family survive. The kids are allowed to be kids. And this is when toys, per se, became a thing, as it were. I mean, there's always been toys, but kids were allowed to start collecting. And I think that's around the time in the 60s, I believe, when G.I. Joe really came into prominence.
Well, what you're getting at is, I've talked about this many times, is in 1963 when Joe came onto the scene, all toys in general, with rare exceptions here and there of tin toys that were based off of space and everything like that, but all toys in general between, let's say, G.I. Joe up until Hasbro really and Kenner really started doing their Star Wars stuff in 77 to 79, were very based on toys that were emulations of real life. And what I mean by that is, and I've talked about this many times, but I don't know if I've talked about it on TFYLP, but I just want to just touch on it here, is that our parents, all of us here in general, regardless of the generation that they were in, even if they didn't have a childhood with toys, the toys that they grew up with, that even if they didn't get to play with them, that if they longed or dreamed of them, were always toys based in real life. And which is, if you were a Hot Wheels collector in the 50s and the 40s and the 30s and going into, even if you were Dinky and Corgi in the 60s, which was cars, die-cast cars, when you became an adult, You didn't need to have the die-cast car. You could have the real car. You know what I mean? And having a real car is a very adult thing. It's funny how we skew that and go, oh, why are you buying, you know, a 1951, you know, souped up whatever? Well, I want to remember my childhood. No one says he's immature for wanting to remember his childhood by buying the old real car that he used to play with as a kid. Then you go into G.I. Joe. You know, if a kid played with G.I. Joe and he grew up and he joins the army, or he collects firearms, or he you know, he does paintball over the weekend. No one ever accuses him of being immature, even though he's reenacting what he enjoyed as a child,
right,
in a adult form. And this is something that was very predominant growing up. You know, and again, it's the same thing when you go with other toy lines that existed during the 50s and the 60s. All of a sudden now we have Jedis, robots from another planet. We have, you know, obviously G.I. Joe is still the only one that's kind of grounded in reality slightly. But everything else was more hard to emulate. You couldn't grow up and be a Jedi and, you know, join NASA and hope to find Emerald Ackbar out there. You couldn't become a toy car that turns into a robot and fight a civil war over 4 million years. You couldn't become Mega Man. You couldn't become any of these 80s and 90s toy lines that were off the wall, whether it be, you know, Food Fighters or, you know, or Cowboys Amu Mesa, Ninja Turtles. None of those. You could become an adult and continue that emulation. The only way you were able to continue that was to continue collecting it, continue reading it, and continue enjoying it. You couldn't be like you. There was no transition. You know, same thing. Kids in the 40s and the 50s, my father played hockey as a kid. He either became a real hockey player or collected hockey cards. But you know what? The funny thing is that playing hockey in as an adult is not shunned upon. It's exercise. You know what I mean? But yet no one would say, oh, he's only playing hockey because when he was a kid, he's playing hockey. He was so immature. Right.
Well, know? I think the thing that I was working up to, you know, and this is, you know, like I said, talking to my mom – about collecting and how it's perceived. You know, we all grew up in an age when, you know, playing with toys, collecting, was more mainstream. And as we've said over the last several years, Sergio, I'm, you know, not to knock on you, but, you know, you have not known an age when collecting really wasn't accepted. You know, I mean, whenever we were younger, like Brett and I and Daniel, there was a time whenever I didn't, you know, I'd see an adult collector in a store for Hot Wheels or something other, I'd think, you know, that's so strange. Why does that grown man collect toys? And it still happens today. I mean, there's still a lot of people out there that have that mentality. But as we said, it's a lot more accepted today than it has been. But what I was getting at was that over the years, the perception has changed, mainly because of incomes have increased, family or household incomes have increased. Children are allowed to be kids a little bit longer than they were years and years ago. The marketing is like it's in your face, and that changed, I believe, back in the early 80s whenever the cartoons were allowed to be made to sell the toys.
FCC changed it in 1981. Mm-hmm. Changed it that you were allowed to make a cartoon that was marketed for toys, and right away Hasbro went crazy and Mattel went crazy, and you ended up with He-Man, G.I. Joe, and the rest is history.
But, you know, you look at the thing now, and people are, you know, I'm not ashamed to go out in public now and fly my geek flag, as it were, because
I love it.
I know. Yeah. I love what I am, what I do. And the key thing that I was getting at was that, perceptions and values are the key thing that have changed over the decades. You look at kids that grew up in the 30s and 40s, my parents, they were, you know, their values were to grow up, have kids, and work hard, you know, build that house. We still have those same values today, but, you know, me, I want to own my own home. I want to own, you know, a nice car and everything, but it's not the top thing on my priority list. You know, as long as I've got a roof over my head and food to put in my mouth, I don't care if I rent. You know, I want to be able to collect the toys and enjoy the things that I enjoy. That in and of itself hasn't changed. People have always wanted to enjoy the things they enjoy. It's just that we now have things that are more intrinsic rather than, you know, going out and playing a sport like you said your dad did.
Well, but I just feel that I think everyone does the exact same thing, is that everyone wants to enjoy their simpler times of youth. It's just that past generations, that simple time of youth was very different than, like you said, Great Depression, working in the fields. I'm pretty sure if you turned to your father and said to him, what would you like to do to pass the time that would be enjoyable and, you know, something that, I'm pretty sure if you really hyperanalyzed it, it would be grounded in something, whether it be linked, grounded in something from his childhood. Even if he said, I'd just like to go out and grab a bite. Who knows? Maybe when, you know, he was a teenager, his most enjoyable thing when he was a teenager was just going out with his buddies and eating, you know, and just sitting around shooting the shit. You never know. And that's why, like, it's just that our generation was very blessed when it came to the beautiful 80s marketing. You know what I mean? Like, we just had so much in our face. There was so much there, video games, comic books, toys, movies. That was so much of our childhood. So you couldn't escape it. But the thing is that that's why when we look back and go, what do we enjoy and love? We always are connected to those simpler times. And it's like, it's always based on that. Just depending on the generation, you see those relations.
You know, my dad, whenever he's still to this day, if I mention toys, Transformers, what have you, he doesn't get it. He thinks it's the biggest waste of time because in his mind and what his values were whenever he grew up, it's a total waste. Total waste.
Because it's based, again, it's based in his time group where it's like, well, son, when I was your age, we were just fighting to survive. Why would you spend $14.99 on a piece of plastic that's not going to plow the field? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Prowl's not going to get you nowhere. He's just going to sit there on that shelf permanently and get dust, and I don't see the value in it. But that's just it. You could. That's why whenever you argue with someone, especially when it comes to this kind of stuff, you have to know where they're coming from.
I've bought two cars from the sale of toys.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's so, something you have. That's a whole other aspect is when you turn your hobby into also a monetary gain. And then when it's a business, and even then, you know, that's the funny thing is, like, I wonder how many people were judgmental of, you know, Walt Disney when he was making millions making cartoons as opposed to the people who watch cartoons, you know. So it's always that other layer that you'd have to factor in. Do people, you know, criticize what was his name, Brian Goldman, who made, you know, who worked with Hasbro and made the toys as opposed to the people who play with them? You know, I mean, he became a millionaire running a toy company while other individuals just bought them. You know, so there's always, you know, that too. When you're making money from what would be considered a geek thing, you don't really get labeled as it as much because now you're a businessman.
Well,
so
Shelf Warmer commented on the YouTube channel, man caves are the thing of the day. It is not uncommon, especially in our fandom, for people to have a man cave, as it were. You know, have a room that is specifically dedicated mainly to our collections.
My coworker complimented mine the other day at work.
Yeah, my apartment, I don't have Transformers displayed. I mean, I've got posters in my living room because, well, I live by myself. But, you know, as far as toys go, they are nowhere else in this apartment except for in this room. So I can have company over, and outside of the posters in my living room wall, on my living room wall, they would have no idea that I'm a big-time collector. You know, and I've shared the story on here before. You know, whenever I met my current girlfriend, you know, I told her that, you know, there's something you need to know about me. you know, and this is whenever she came over the first time, you know, she's like, I'm like, I've got a room. And
it's like you're coming out. You know?
Well, you know, and she, her,
something you got to know.
I'm sure she was thinking like 50 Shades of Grey type.
Oh, my God. They're on gay. I knew it. I knew it.
No, no. But I mean, you know, I open up the room and I flip on the lights. And the way I have it rigged is I flip one switch and all the lights in my displays and everything all come on at once. So it's like, you know, the light of God shines down on my collection as soon as you flip the switch. And it's, you know, she was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. You know, it's not weird. I mean, I have been in a relationship, a short-term relationship with a woman who, once she found out that I collected toys, thought it was absolutely deplorable. And she broke it off with me. You know,
I dated one chick that was like that too. She didn't understand it, you know, but the irony was, and I used to tell her, I'm like, would you prefer I did this or would you prefer I went drinking? You know, would you prefer that my recreational activity was drugs instead? Would you prefer that you know, like there's worse things that one could spend their money on. And let me tell you something, in my opinion, might be biased, it's probably one of the best things one can, but I mean, it's just, I've met people that that still don't get it. And you know what's funny? I'm pretty, and mind you, I haven't seen this girl in like 15 years, but I'm pretty sure today, I bet she gets it now. But 15 years ago, I was in college. She didn't get it.
Yeah. You know? But, you know, I think we've diverged too far from the topic. You know, I mean, we've been hitting all around it a lot. But another thing that I think we should have mentioned before, a stereotype, is that we're all fat bearded guys that live in our grandparents' or our mom's basement.
Axio. No fat guy here.
Well, I'm fat and I have a beard, but I don't live in my mom's basement. I've lived on my own for over 20 years. So, you know, but it is a perception, you know, and there are quite a few people that still live with their parents or live with their grandparents that, I guess, feed the stereotype. But why is that a bad stereotype that we perceive it as? What do you guys think?
I don't live with her. She lives with me. No, I mean, I did not have sexual relations
with that woman. She.
The irony was, the primary reason actually for moving out was just that the collection got too big. It was almost like if I didn't move, and it's not that they were objecting. We'll get into later on, because I mean, I live in an awesome family, but it's just that we got to the point where it was like I was storing away more toys than I had on display, and it got to the point I was like, you know what? I got the money. Let's get a joint. You know, let's buy a house and make something amazing. And that was more the case with me. But the irony was, prior to that, I was in my mama's basement, literally, you know, with my collection.
Well, that was Transformers new fan here on YouTube says a perfect thing. And this is the case in a lot of people's thing, is that her mother and her live together because neither of them can afford to live alone. So why not? You know, it's a mutual thing. I know several people.
I know quite a few that live with their parents just because they wouldn't be able to live on their own. So,
but
and I'm pretty sure if they met a significant other, they'd probably been with their parents.
Why is it a negative? Why do people outside the hobby perceive it as a negative thing?
Association of independence. I think that it goes with the fact of adulthood. Adulthood is independence. If you don't live with your parents, you're independent. You're paying your own bills. You're feeding yourself. You're doing your own dishes. You're doing your own laundry. There's that co-association that if you still live with your parents, there's a strong possibility that that individual doesn't take, you know, doesn't handle responsibility well. For all we know, the individual that still lives with his mom might have his dishes done for him, you know, doesn't fill his own fridge, doesn't pay his own rent.
Look at the movie, The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, everyone, it was a funny movie. Everyone thought was, you know, poking, you know, fun at it, this and the other.
It's mental sealed card.
Let's think about this. Okay, let's think about it. Seriously. The nerds looked at it from one aspect, and everyone else looked at it from another, like, yep, that's true, that's true. And you're like, that's a stereotype, but
it was a stereotype, right. And it also gave a very bad message at the end, that movie, I found.
Yes.
Where ultimately, in the end, he met a woman who then convinces him to get rid of everything. And right. I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but you know, when you look at his collection and you see like, you know, Universal Studios, Monster, Migos and stuff like that. So here's this woman that came into his life and just like, sell it all. You'll open up a store. The irony is if 40-year-old Virgin was existed today, that electronics store that he sold his entire collection to open up for probably doesn't exist anymore today. And he's probably kicking himself because he sold his mint on card Dragon Ball Super Saiyan 4 GT Goku, which I'm not joking.
Not getting off topic too much, but the funny part was you do know that was an eBay store.
Yeah, exactly. Which
they blew up and they went everywhere after that movie.
Yeah, of course.
There's an eBay store.
But his dream was he was going to sell his collection and fund right, enough money to open up his own electronics store.
I don't know if it was because of that movie or just the time or whatever, but they blew up and they were everywhere. I just thought that was funny.
What year was that movie? Anyone know?
Late 90s, I think.
No, I think it was 2000. Say one
thing. Real quick. Wait, the 40-year-old version?
Yeah.
That was like an 05, I think. Was it? Either 05 or 06.
I know it's an old movie.
Yeah, it's 05. You're correct.
Say something that I'm going to segue just a hair, because this was so awesome when he said, I'm like, God dang it. I can't believe I didn't think about that. But has anyone else... I'm trying to do this share thing, see if it works. Seeing this Unicron lamp.
Oh, yes. I posted on Twitter because it has Hot Rod on it.
Holy crap. And for remind you about it. God dang it. I mean, this thing is awesome. This is amazing. So all I'm going to say is this is a definite pickup. Let me know where to go, and I'm going to get it.
Right now, it appeared on a Weibo, which is a Chinese website. So it's probably just leaks right now of packaging. Trust me, Brett.
I'm curious to know how big
pre-order ready for that thing.
Yeah, I'm just curious how big it's going to be. If it's a standard lamp, which is what, about 18 inches?
It's 22 inches tall, I believe, is what the dimensions I saw. So it's just under 2 feet.
I'm looking. I'm trying to find pictures. Does it show where it actually the light comes from?
LEDs all over it. It lights up from within more than.
Yeah, it says that according to the article, it says the base lights up and everything else lights up, and the hot rod is attachable through electronic connection, which then lights up the matrix. But I mean, there's not enough information on it at the moment. But trust me, I'm all over this thing.
Yeah,
all over.
I don't think it'll be necessarily something that will be used to light an entire room, but it'll be a nice accent in a dark room, I believe.
Oh, that's amazing. That's another one of those we were talking about, the non-toy stuff. There you go, guys.
But Shelfwarmer had another one too. David from Toy Hell on Collector Intervention. A lady kept saying she wanted him to find a balance between store stock and personal collection, and all she did was to convince him to sell a G2 breakdown. Yeah, now, but, truth be told, that store that
was so fake.
Well, the whole show was faked. It is an example of a negative connotation and a negative spin put on our hobby from the outside world.
But you have to understand that chick, I forget her name. She's a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for? She's a bit of a hunter for this kind of stuff, where what she does essentially is it was the show, because here's the thing. That show originally approached a lot of us. Like David was, I was approached for it too, but originally it had a different title. It was called Extreme Collectors or something. And as the show was being developed, it then changed into Collector Intervention while they were filming, where they started interviewing people within the family. What do you think of it? Is there any negative aspects of it? And that's where it kind of fell into that. And that show, when it came out, man, like it was still at that time where like they were still picking on nerds, you know, they were still like going, oh, you know, it's a problem, it's this and that. The irony is this woman now is like selling coins on the shopping network, literally. Like that's what she does now for a living, because she's just this person that goes from one antique thing to the next, and she saw a gig where she could make some money on TV, because a lot of these people, they get good contracts when they get a 13-episode TV series for syndication. And she made her money, knew nothing of the hobbies that she was talking about. She knew nothing of Transformers, nothing of Star Wars when she was giving the Star Wars guy problems. She knew nothing of the stuff when she was giving Sean Long a headache. You know what I mean? She knew nothing of this stuff. But the point is that she saw the money in it, because what I was going back to before was there was this huge marketability, and there was all these networks saw so much money in focusing on this kind of geek culture stuff. I recently filmed a new show called Geek Me, which is going to be all over the Bell Network, which is Bell is going to have their own channel soon and stuff like that. And it's all about toy collecting, but it was done by a collector for a collector. So it's, you know, things are changing, but there still is that side of it that's still dorky. You know what I mean? There's still people who film these shows, and they're still.
I have high hopes for, speaking of shows coming up, and something that we mentioned earlier, Netflix original series, The Toys That Made Us. They've already said that they're going to do a Transformers episode.
Yes,
I am eagerly anticipating this particular episode, but the show in general, because it, you know, it's, I'm hoping that it portrays us, or portrays the hobby in a positive manner, because in a sense, I am a person. Transformers isn't me, but at the same time, it's a big part of who I am. I am drawn because, and a lot of me is Transformers. I think about Transformers every day. It's something I obsess on. But I think it's a healthy obsession. It's something that's good, clean, and fun. And it's something that, you know, I'll talk about with anybody. From my gamer tags on gaming networks to, you know, I signed up to a car forum a couple days ago to talk about some issues with my pickup truck. And my username was Weird Wolf, and, you know, my avatar is the character Weird Wolf, you know. So I have no qualms about being a fan out and about, you know. It's
a lot has changed. Now, like I said, today now, there's little to no one that sees a problem with it anymore. You know, now I joke, like, you know, you go to the Toys R Us cashier and they ask you if you want a gift receipt. And I always, like, you know, if it's a new girl, it's like my opportunity to go, no, it's okay, I'm just going to go home and open it and play with it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just, to me, it's changed so much, and it's not an issue anymore. And as time progresses and we become the old people, we become the guys in the 70s shaking our, you know, we're in our 70s and we're shaking our sticks, but we were the guys also collecting toys. We're not going to see an issue. It's going to become the social norm, because so much is we, like, in 100 years from 1900s to 2000, there was so much social change. I don't want to go into a big rant, but I mean, we had two world wars, we had depression, so much of a social change. But soon we're going to hit that point when the 60s, you know, which was the revolution of peace and love and everything moving forward, you know, after the Cold War and Vietnam. We had now peace and relaxation, being able to spoil ourselves is the best way to put it, because we weren't worrying about everything else in the world. When we reach that point where it's going to be 100 years from then, I'm pretty sure it'll be the social norm, because not so much has happened since then. You have to understand that the 1960s were a long time ago. So already things are changing. Yeah. You know, was like when G1 came out, 60s were only 20 years ago. You know, it's not the case anymore. It's 50 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't know. Well, I find it hard to say that that's going to continue the way for the next 20 years. To where we have disposable income, to where we can satisfy our urges to see, you know, to relive the old times, you know, and buy all this stuff, disposable income and all that. So it'll just
shift, where in the sense is kids of today's generation that grew up on Call of Duty and stuff like that, they'll, if they ever want to go back and relive, you know, their video game, because the less kids play with toys today, so it's more video games. Right. They want to relive, oh man, I really loved Call of Duty when I played it on PlayStation 2 or Xbox, the original Xbox. You're going to fast forward, you know, 20 years, and they'll have, you know, collection packs. Lord knows we have that already with old video games. You have a Mario All-Star. You'll have a, you know, the old Duke Nukem actually got released on its 20th anniversary. They reissued it, the old Duke Nukem game for PC, Duke Nukem 3D. So, like, it's the same thing. Nostalgia will just change its form. But I think that geek culture as a whole, video games, comic books, all of that, has become one giant smorgasbord of acceptance at this point that – what can you truly point at now that truly is geeky at this point? You know what I mean? You know, astrophysics, you know, like you have to like really like you're going down a rabbit hole at this point to find that.
Well, you know, I think the thing is that we need to look at putting a positive spin on there. I used on the website on tftalk.net, I used an image from The Simpsons, the comic book guy. And I photoshopped in Masterpiece Soundwave into his hands whenever he was actually holding up a comic book. But I photoshopped in Masterpiece Soundwave because I think whenever there are stereotypes of Transformers collectors, that is a prime example of what people see whenever from the
outside. Worst toy ever.
Yeah, what people see whenever they look at us, you know, because we're overly critical over a damn toy, for crying out loud. You know, it's like, oh, I don't like that. There's no articulation. The detail's not there. This is all wrong. You know, Bay movies suck. You know,
people could be critical about sports to an extreme. People could you know, people could be critical of music. But those things, at least for the longest time, were social norms at that point. You know what I mean? So, but things have changed. Now, look, now you literally like, you know, clickbait articles all over Facebook because they make millions of dollars, all based on, you know, here's the top 10 things that are going to be happening in the next Infinity Gauntlet movie. You know what I mean? Because they know.
I got an easy one for you. Take the same topic. You talk about your favorite toy that's coming out and what you don't like about it, and argue. Take the same topic or the same argument and change that into football, Super Bowl, and
now it's fine.
One's acceptable and one's not. You know, one's like, what are y'all talking about? You know, it's still a love for what you love. All right, you love sports. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Love sports. You love Transformers. Love them. Great. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But, you know, you're right. You go and the proverbial water cooler and you start talking about the, you know, daggone Patriots did this or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And you'll have four or five people, you know, chime in.
Well, I mean, the same thing could be.
God dang, you know, that masterpiece, you know. Primal, it didn't have the mace, and I can't believe they did it. People are going to look at
damn banana box.
The funny what? Thing is that actually
damn
happens.
Banana box, and
that actually happens at my workplace because there's a couple of collectors, and we're always constantly arguing or talking about stuff.
Well, that's
our down-
but it, you got it's, slow, it's slowly becoming a norm.
What?
It's slowly becoming. You'll have guys in their 30s in workplaces. I know it happens at my workplace that they'll talk about the latest Marvel movie or something in their opinion. Now, they're ignorant of the actual comics and stuff, but they'll passionately discuss, oh, man, why did Gwen Stacy die in the last Spider-Man movie? They didn't know this was something that happened 40 years ago, and they're just catching up now. But you know what I mean? The point is that it's becoming a social norm. It takes time.
It is, but you're correct. It takes time. Yeah. Now, when I was growing up, no way.
Oh yeah, of course not. No way. It, like I said, in the 90s for me, no way. It wasn't the case.
Well, I remember when I was in high school, and I was a collector back in G1. Let's see here, 1990 was the last year of G1, last official year of G1.
91 was Action Masters.
Action Masters, okay. Yeah. I graduated high school in 93. So I was still collecting Transformers up until the MicroMasters in 1989 and 90.
There were some MicroMasters with Action Masters.
Yeah, I was still collecting then. So here I was 16, 17 years old, and I was still an active fan, still collected, and I collected Dino Riders at the time. And it was generally, you know, I was mocked at my school because I was, you know, I seemed to be this guy that refused to grow up because I was a Toys R Us kid.
Now that you say that, I'm kind of curious.
And I think that's a good segue into something else, but
it is, but I'm going to go into something else before that. You said the last thing that you collected that was G1 was Duran?
It was MicroMasters.
Daniel?
Last thing I collected? Bad example. I lived in a toy collecting household. Never stopped.
But you were afterwards.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, how old were you in, what, 1990?
1990 specifically? I was 7 years old.
Okay. 7, 8 years old. Did you collect Transformers?
No, it was the Ninja Turtle boom.
Okay. So, between the two of us. Okay, when did Predaking come out?
87.
Okay. Predaking was the last Transformer 86. I ever bought.
He was 86.
No, it was okay. 80. It was 87.
Whichever. That was the last Transformer I ever bought at the store.
Wow.
G1 that I ever bought. That's it. I mean, if people want to figure out timeline there, there you go.
That's the last
Transformer because I looked and looked, and believe it or not, it took me forever to find Dive Bomb.
I could not find
that one.
When it comes to G1 itself, I got Blaster in 1986.
Yep.
And then I had MicroMasters, and that was it. That was literally it.
I'm trying to get people an understanding that when you were living through it, there comes a point to where you cut off, you stop. and for me, it was. It really was. And I'll be the first one to admit it. Predaking, I really, really wanted it. The comic came out. It's funny. There's this thing that was defying Megatron. And if you remember the comics, and I had to get it. So I went out and I tried to find it, and it took me forever to find Dive Bomb. That was the last G1 I ever bought. And I was done. I never bought another one. All my Transformers went into a box. They went into my closet, and that was it.
Same thing with me.
I didn't touch Transformers until 95 when Beast Wars came out. And then I went, I do have those.
Daniel, by the way, I was right. It was 1986.
It was 86?
Yes.
Okay.
What I have. So from 86 to 95, I didn't do anything.
Well, you know, my reasoning whenever I stopped collecting Transformers, and it was around 1990-ish, I didn't, I'd been with Transformers since the beginning, 1984. You know, I'd seen all their permutations, for those 5-6 years that they were out. And it just seemed that they were getting cheaper, smaller. And then I saw the Action Masters. And I think that's why I still hold a negative connotation with Action Masters in my own mind. It's because, you know, they had finally got to the point where Transformers didn't transform anymore. They were just little action figures. And it pissed me off to no end as a fan and collector. And it was at that point, you know, I'm like, what's the point anymore? And then I was also getting to the point where I'm like, I like girls. I want more. I want to spend time with girls. You know, so I took those toys and like you, Brett, I put them in a big brown box.
I did.
And packed them up and put them away. They were gone. I didn't see them again until 1999.
Here's the difference. And we're talking about the stereotypes, this, that, and the other. I did. I went out and I tried to find all the members of Predaking, and I got them all, and I was happy. And what did I get? I got hammered by my father. These are toys. Put them away. You don't do this stuff, blah, blah, blah. So what I do, I put them away, and I went out and I did baseball. I did football. I did wrestling. I did all this stuff, and I put that stuff away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the funny part. It wasn't until, like I said, 95, Beast Wars. I saw the cartoon. I went, holy crap, this thing's cool. it got me back into it. And then I found out, and you'll love this, that they had these things called Action Masters. And I went, these things are cooler than crap. They look just like they did in the show. And I loved them. I did. That's why I love Action Masters. It was like, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I saw everything up until that point. And
you like show that. You like show.
And that's also why the last thing I ever collected to complete my G1 collection was Micro Masters. If you think about it, it was right in between. Mm-hmm. I had to get those Action Masters. I picked those up before I even completed my G1 stuff. Loved Action Masters. Love them.
So we've spoken tonight about, you know, stereotypes, the different kinds of stereotypes, and pretty much it's to the point now where we as fans of Transformers, Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, whatever you love, video games, it doesn't matter what other people think. And it's getting more and more where it's just more of an accepted part of culture. And yes, there's going to be those holdouts. There's going to be those people out in stores. You're going to run into them every time you go out and be your geek self. But it really doesn't matter.
They're the weird ones now.
They're the weird ones, you know, and there's more and more people that's starting to realize, like that cashier at Target the other night. They know that there's people out there that collect and come through there and buy these toys for themselves, not for their kids. I mean, yeah, there's people that do that too, but the collector market, the older collector is getting more out there. But I gotta ask, is such a thing to be too old to collect? And I have to be honest, I turned 42 years old this month or this year, and you know, while Brett was at 20 years ago.
Holy crap, you're 42?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe you're that old. Jesus Christ, I can't believe it.
I have to admit, you know, there has been thoughts going through my head, you know, do I want to be 50, 60, 65, 70 years old and still going to Walmart, going to toy stores and buying a new toy? You know, will there be a point in time whenever it just doesn't do it for me anymore?
You know,
that's just it. You go to Walmart because you enjoy it.
No, I go to Walmart because that's all.
You know, no, but the point is the end game is when you stop enjoying it is when you're going to stop doing it. But if you enjoy it, then you won't stop. You know what I mean?
I'll say definitively, yes, there's going to come a time that you will stop. And I'm not talking about premature death, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, let's not get into that. I'm just saying, eventually, it's not that you grow out of it. It's just that there's other things that take more precedence in your life. And you will.
Well, you know, recent events have gotten me personally thinking, you know, it's like, I love this hobby. I love the toys, you know. I love these characters. They mean so much to me. There's no way, I have to say, there's no way for me personally to ever fully get out of collecting and fully stop being a fan. Yeah, scaling it way, way back, I can see myself doing that.
I can see people scaling it back, but I can never see them getting out of the game. Not if you love it.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I truly love this hobby. But there are things right now to me that are starting to take more and more of a priority and more of a precedence in my life. You know, like I said, for many, many years, I've had no desire to own my own home. You know, I've been perfectly content renting. You know, I've always owned a near new vehicle, but not a new vehicle. Now I'm starting to have the desire to own a brand new vehicle, you know, and it's been so hard for me to do that because on a single income household, and let's face it, Transformers collecting is not cheap. You know,
In your case, it's more so your decision is being made based on a financial one rather than it is being based on that of an actual enjoyment. It's not that Transformers is burning you out or you don't enjoy the hobby anymore. Don't enjoy the fiction. It's just that right now on a financial level, right, which I could understand for anybody. If you had to eat or buy that, you know, Titans Return six shot, I suggest you eat. Titan Return six shot will always be there. You know, food in your stomach, that's when you know you got a problem.
Right.
So,
right.
But that's what I'm saying. In your case, more right now, it's more of a financial situation. I'm pretty sure, Duran, if that new vehicle was sitting in your driveway and that collection behind you was sitting in your brand new owned household, maybe you would reconsider the situation because then it would be a financial thing.
It's not necessarily that, though. Here's my thinking. It's not the financial thing, even though it is a part of it. The main thing I want to do, and this is something that's actually came up, since BotCon is no more, and TFCon is pretty much the only Transformers collector convention out there. There's really only one game in the show right now, as far as a have to or a need to go thing, and my whole thinking is that for the last 2004, so 13 years, I have spent so much money and so much time traveling to Transformers conventions, and whenever I do travel, it's usually going to a convention, and my experiences usually have to revolve around the convention. I want to actually travel now, go somewhere that isn't going to a Transformer convention, and I want to go somewhere with my girlfriend and experience a time and not have to be on a time schedule. Oh, we got the convention this weekend. We got to watch what we spend because I want to have some extra spending money at the con, you know. I want to travel. I want to experience other things more that isn't Transformers related.
It is night and day. Yeah. And I say that because every year I go to TFCon, BotCon, not anymore, but I still set aside a time to do my family vacation. It's night and day. They're different.
Totally.
You will see a total different. It's not your life. You're right. I don't have to be here. It means, you know, I'm going to get up right now and maybe I'll go down to the beach or maybe I'll sleep for another 3-4 hours. And that's my day. You know what?
You don't have to line up early for the club store.
Yeah.
There you go. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those are great. I will say this much, and this is my little tip, especially for collectors who have families, is you have to divide, especially if you have a spouse that is not into collecting like you are. You have to divide. If you have to have two quote-unquote vacations,
make it happen. Sometimes, though.
One Transformer or whatever, and one just family. You have to divide it.
And with the beauty of BotCon being absent now, now that that exists, that hole exists essentially, and TFCon, if you miss it, you're not really missing out on exclusives per se unless you're big into the third party scene. Now that you have that opportunity to travel, but here's the beautiful thing. You could travel. You could have a great time. You could sit on those pearly white beaches and enjoy the sand or whatever your travel experience is. But the beautiful thing is you'll come home, the collection will still be there, the fandom will still be there, the podcast will still be there, and you could take $4.99, walk into Toys R Us and still get a Titans Returns mini little figure and still participate in the enjoyment of the plastic crack. So, right. Like, you'd still would be able to do all of that and travel. Or alternatively, scrap the travel. You get your brand new vehicle. You'd still would be able to get your 5-digit vehicle and enjoy the hobby. There's always a balance. I think that the biggest mistake that people make is overspending. It's the same thing. You know, I don't have every single toy that's on the shelves right now. Would I like to? Of course I would. But that would be irresponsible of me as an adult to just spend ludicrous amounts of money on all the stuff that's out right now. To buy a Fortress Maximus when it first came out at mind you, this is Canadian numbers, at $220 Canadian. You know what I mean? I waited and then it became cheaper, dropped to like $120 when the special started happening and stuff. So there's always a way to enjoy the hobby, maintain a proper financial situation, and be, still well, be a large part of it.
You know, sure. Finances are a part of it. And, you know, like I said, I think a lot of what my thinking is not necessarily the finances in and of themselves. They haven't been the problem. It's been the prioritization of my finances because, you know, I always made sure I had enough to live, but, you know, if I had an extra $100, $200, you know, I was going to spend it on toys, you know, because I didn't have the aspiration to do more, you know, with my money. Now that I've got more of an aspiration to do, I'm like, okay, let's scale this back and apply more to that. And it's more of a priority than a capability.
It's never really so much the financial. To me, I feel it's the percentage, which is – it doesn't matter if you make $30,000 a year or $100,000 a year. It matters how much percentage of it you spend on your hobby. If you spend literally 70% of your income on toys, you got a problem. You know what I mean? That means that you're putting away none for savings. You're literally using that other 30% for food, paying your bills, whatever those bills be, or mortgages – and any other expenses such as gasoline, food, all of that, and putting nothing into savings. And you should never be to me, I feel you should be spending maybe only 40%. And it's even more amazing if you spend only 40% of that, but you also did it smartly. You know, you didn't have to like, you know, yeah, if something's rare and you're going to miss that opportunity, you know, do that pre-order. But I mean, so much product that's out there right now is not necessary to be dropping the big dimes on, especially like third party. My God, I have a friend right now. I might as well shout him out because he's probably going to be doing eBay auctions like crazy soon. Cheers, Ian. He's going to be selling a lot of his third party stuff soon. And one thing that he said that he was not happy about was he was looking at the prices of what a lot of his old third party stuff is worth now. And he's going, yep. Oh, man, it's going to be brutal. He's talking loss on a lot of this stuff. And but the reality is, what if you were one of those guys that really wanted that third party thing? You didn't get it 3 years past and you got it now. Aren't you smiling? You know, like that's the thing. So, I mean, there's so many ways to go about it. And I like that's, you know, like to me, there is no end game. But I mean, we'll go into our own individual reasons why. But I mean, we'll do it around, I guess.
Well, I mean, is the I don't want to get too far away from the main topic at hand here. It's like, is there a point whenever you can feel like you're too old?
Never.
I mean, like you said, I mean, do you see anybody in their 60s? You know, collecting anything. I mean, I have seen G.I. Joe.
I'll go into my example. It's in my case, I have a father who's a toy collector. I was raised in a house of toy collectors. My father, I want to do a YouTube video about him one day because it's so remarkable. Everything that we have, these glass displays and stuff, my father helped build because he has the exact same thing at home, but cars. Diecast cars, Dinkies, Thunderbirds, Yellow Submarine Beetles. That's his thing. He loves diecast. And being in a household where you had a father who was a toy collector, what do you think happens to me when you reach that age when you should have stopped collecting with toys? Not when you have a dad who collects toys. You know what I mean? Nothing wrong there. Now you're talking today. My dad today is still on eBay buying Dinky toys at – not that my mom should know, but sometimes $400, you know? Like, my dad is dropping major coin on Dinky toys and corgis that even I don't drop on Transformers. So, you know, like, so you look at my pop, and he's now, God, he's almost hitting his 60s. You know what I mean? No end game in sight. this man is going to be doing this till the day he dies. I know. And as morbid as it sounds, I feel like he's going to outlive my mom and keep doing it forever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I feel like he's going to just be doing it till the day he dies. It makes him happy. He has his own, like, he invented the man cave. Back in 1993, he had that toy room. That was his toy room and his vinyl records. And he had that man cave back then, and it was his serene place that he could get away, you know, listen to his music and just enjoy his nostalgia,
you know,
listen to vinyl records of 60s.
That reminds me. That reminds me. Whenever I went to church at one time years ago, the church that I went to, I didn't make it obviously known that I was a collector back then. And this was, you know, more in the early days of my adult collector phase. Basically, all I had was my G1s on display in on a bookshelf in my apartment. And somebody had said along the way to one of the members in the church that I was a Transformers collector. And another one of the collectors, or one of the members of the church, came up there, and he was a man in his early to mid 50s.
Was this? Just out of curiosity,
this was in the early 2000s. I'm wanting to say 2002 ish.
Okay.
And he was in his early to mid 50s, and he was also a retired Navy captain. You know, he was kind of high up there in the ranks, from what I remember. He might have even been higher than captain, but he had been in the Navy for years and years and years. He came up to me and he said, "So you collect toys and everything?" And I told him, and he said, "Would you mind coming over to my house sometime soon?" He says, "There's something I'd like to show you." I'm sitting here thinking that, you know, he's got a, you know, his son's old toys or something he'd want to sell me, which there was actually some other people that wanted to do that too. But I went over to his house, and he says, "I want you to know that you're not alone in your fandom." And he took me downstairs to his study. You know, he had a rather nice house. I'll give him that. And opens up these two wooden doors to this room with, much like what Brett has and you have there in the background, and I have, lit display cases, and it was wall to wall, the 12-inch G.I. Joe stuff. He had everything loose and sealed, and everything. I mean, the sealed ones were in pristine mint condition. I mean, I'm talking like no boxware, you know. And he's like, "This is where I come to unwind." He says, "I love G.I. Joe."
And what's great about that, because you mentioned Navy captain, related to Army and all that kind of stuff, that's his outlet.
Yeah, he went into it because of G.I. Joe. That he made it his career in life,
exactly what
because
I said.
Of what he because of his love for G.I. Joe. And then he was sitting there, and we were looking at that, and then this wall over here. All of the 3 3/4 inch 80s Joes, you know, that we grew up with and everything. And he's and I'm like, "Wow, you even have
that's
the newer Joes." And
that's a rarity to have that double dips in both.
Yeah, he said they were Joes. He said I didn't grow up with them. And he says that was actually probably the hardest collection to get, because he said most of them came out while he was serving. So his wife and his son actually picked up a lot of them for him.
But he must like the USS flag and keel haul and everybody.
Well, actually, he had a sealed USS flag sitting on the floor.
There you go.
In front of it. He said, I wanted one that was that I could display open, but he said I just didn't have the room in here. But yeah, he had all of that, and he said that I collected the older Joes as a kid. And as a teenager, and then, you know, while I was early in the Navy. But he said whenever he got older and had been in the Navy a long time, those the new Joes came out. You know, he was picking them up as he could. And then after he got out, after he retired, he finished off that collection. And I dare say he had a complete collection. or a near complete collection. He had a lot of rare and expensive stuff, and I was blown away. And he's like, that was my first foray. And I wanted to tie this story in with our previous discussion of stereotypes, because I was at that time, up until that time, a fearful of what other people might think of my hobby. You know, I would hide it a little bit, and then after that experience, and he talked to me. He's like, don't be afraid to like what you like. He said, just don't let it. He said, you don't have to let it rule your life. He says, a lot of people don't know that I have this room. He says, my family knows, and a few other people knows. He said, this is my hobby. This is my escape.
And you know what? And the funny thing is that you don't have to wear it on your shoulder. You don't have to, that's just it. People choose to, but you don't have to, because I always say, someone like me who's so knee deep in the hobby, you know, like from every aspect humanly possible. But at the same day, I walk out of that house and I'm just like any other guy. You know what I mean? But man, like, I'll talk your ear off about Transformer if you want to. You know, it's just I always say, enjoy it. Mm. Enjoy it. When you stop enjoying it, that's when you get out of it. But, you know, I do it because I love it. I love the hobby. I love the engineering of Transformer toys. I love the fiction. I love the stories. And at the same time also, and I say this to a lot of people, sometimes when you're burned out, don't always just drop all the toys and go home. Sometimes you just need to do something else. And, you know, I always say, have a secondary hobby, you know, video games, or maybe you're really into the Marvel side of comic books and the movies and stuff. Always have a secondary hobby. Maybe if it's something that's not as expensive as, let's say, Transformers, but it's something that, you know, you could take a step away, because sometimes you might get a shitty year, shitty toy line, shitty movie, shitty cartoon series. Maybe the comics aren't doing great. Yeah, there's always a bunch. There might be a whole year of that. So, you know, you take a year off and then you come back and then it looks good. Look, I mean, some people I know kind of bowed out during the Unicron trilogy, and then they came back when or they bowed out and they were only collecting Alternators at the time and Masterpiece. So it's just – and then they came back when Classics and the movie stuff started coming along. I mean, always, you know, just enjoy it. Just enjoy it. I think you should never be concerned – about what other people think, because then you'll never be happy. Because in all honesty, and I always say, the most important thing is where it's coming from, because a lot of times the criticism might come from people that can't even say what they like, because someone might criticize, why are you collecting toys? Well, what do you do? You know, what do you enjoy? Well, I smoke weed. Congratulations. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, if that's the counter to it, then really, should you feel so bad about yourself? I met a guy that I remember when Energon came out, I bought a bunch of Energon figures. And this guy in college, well, I wasn't in college anymore, but he was in a college. He came and he's like, why you bought all those toys? And I'm like, well, what do you spend your money on? Well, I just spent like $80 on this vintage vinyl record. I'm like, well, there you go. That's what I enjoy. That's what you enjoy. You know what I mean? I'm not criticizing you for spending $80 on a disc of plastic that makes sounds. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing. You know, as long as you enjoy what you enjoy, it really doesn't matter what other people think.
Now, I'm curious, Sergio, what are your thoughts on growing old in the fandom?
Well, I still have a long time to go.
I mean, you got seconds. Seconds, man.
So, I mean, I don't know, because it's like, I've always thought about, you know, when am I going to stop? And if that day ever comes, and I think it's just going to be like, I'm probably going to reach a point where I'm content with what I have. Yes. Or I reach a point where it's like, you know what? This has run its course. I enjoyed the time that I had with it, but you know, it's time to move on to other things. And at this moment in time, I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. I still love the hobby. I love the fandom. I've met so many amazing people because of these toys. And so I guess as of now, I guess I will be collecting as long as there's Transformers on the shelf.
You know, and I think that's been a driving force for me for so many years, is not just the toys and the lore and everything that keeps me coming back for more. It's I sit back and I look at the people that are in my life right now, and outside of my immediate family and my girlfriend, there 90% of the people that are in my life are from this hobby. You know, my friends, you know, the people that I associate with, that I talk to so much, that I vent to, I call, they're all Transformer fans. I can scroll through my phone, the contacts list on my phone, and I'll have real names and then the screen name out next to it, you know. You know,
and there's a lot.
I'm guilty of that, too. I have that on
my
phone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's... You know, and somebody else might look at it and think, "Oh, that's funny," you know, but to me, it's normal. You know, and the people that I've met through this hobby, whether they be famous or not so famous, you know, or pseudo famous like us, you know, the thing is that I wouldn't trade meeting each and every person for the world. And doing this podcast has been one of the best things that I've ever done. In that I've met so many great people and learned so many great things from so many people.
You know what? It's almost no different than the camaraderie that exists with a whole bunch of people that enjoy a sport team. And they all, you know, Super Bowl just passed. You can imagine all those Super Bowl parties. It's their BotCon. It's their giant gathering once a year where they get together, laugh, enjoy, cheer. You know, us, it's when we're at the product preview panel and we're cheering when we find out about a new reveal of something that we're going to be getting. But we do it all together. Same thing with people who enjoy the Super Bowl and football. You don't think that there's podcasts where they all sit around and talk and they've made friends and there's camaraderie that exists of it, and Super Bowl parties, and they go out and they wear, you know, the jersey of the team that they like, and they see another guy who wears the jersey of the team that they like, and they go, "Hey, man, yeah, you know, go – you know, go Patriots, go whoever, you know, 49ers." Doesn't make a difference, but the point is that it shows that that's another big aspect of it. I mean, that's what I love the most, probably more than anything, is the fandom. Is just the existence of that, is that you go, you know, to these shows and you just have this connection with a whole bunch of people, especially when you're a content creator in the fandom. When you're someone who either does podcasts or YouTube stuff and you get that direct feedback from people who enjoy what you do. So you create something based on something you enjoy and people enjoy it also, you know, like that's another driving force, at least for me. You know what I mean? That keeps going forward. You know, I'm pretty sure you get a high when someone comes up to you at BotCon or TFCon and says, you know, "I really enjoy TFYLP. You know what I mean? And for all the time that you spend, you know, maintaining the server, setting up everything.
It makes it worth it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it does.
That's what I'm saying. Let me tell you something. That definitely screws with that end game happening when you have people behind you that are, you know, going, "Hey, man."
Well, you know, and another thing, you know, and I don't mean to put a grim spin on this, but, you know, I can't help but thinking that if it weren't for this fandom, I wouldn't have met such a wonderful person in Chad Williams. You know, God rest his soul. You know, we lost him, you know, several months back. And I spoke at his funeral. And I was not afraid to get up and say that I met the man through a mutual hobby. And I said, I don't expect anyone in attendance there to fully understand what you know, what our hobby meant to us each individually, but to meet people like him that you would have essentially look upon as a brother, and to mourn their loss, and I still mourn it to this day. There's not a day goes by that I don't think about the impact that he had upon me. You know, in the things that we talked about and the things that non-Transformers that we talked about, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Well, that's the thing too, is because we meet each other because of the love of Optimus Prime, but then it splinters into other things. Mm-hmm. We end up talking about life. We end up talking about relationships. You know, we end up getting this camaraderie that all started just because we like a truck that turns into a robot. You know what I mean? And that's what's so magical about that. You know, and we've all talked about life together. We've all talked about, you know, financial situations and all kinds of stuff that's been going on in our lives and stuff like that, and helped each other out and advice. And, you know, I mean, Duran helped me with my video game website, completely separate from Transformers. You know what I mean? Like, it's just there was so many things that we were brought together because of that love of the hobby.
Mm-hmm. Sergio, closing thoughts.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree that it's because of the camaraderie and just belonging to a community. That sense of belonging is really what keeps me going with this hobby. Is, you know, just I always go back to the very first convention I went to. The very first Transformers convention I ever went to was TFCon 2014 in Chicago. And although it was a very small show, to me, that is one of the best conventions I've ever been to. Just because
that was tight.
That feeling of just being surrounded by people who love the same thing that you do
and don't judge you for doing it.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
it's like an undescribable feeling. Like, you feel like you're almost in another world for that weekend. And I've had that feeling in my other hobbies. Like, I really like to follow esports, which is professional video games. And last year, I went to my very first event in person. I flew over to California for that as my vacation for that year. And just being surrounded in an arena full of people who love the same game you do as much as you do was insane and undescribable. And it was the same feeling I got at every BotCon that I went to or every TFCon I went to. You can't replicate that anywhere else than when you're surrounded by thousands of people who just love the same thing you do and can talk about it and, you know, form, like you said, brotherhoods and stuff. There's some people who I've met through my hobbies that I've considered my close friends and that I talk to on a daily basis. And I don't imagine my life without them. And it's all because I buy these.
Yeah.
All right. And
it's just insane.
Yeah. Brett, closing thoughts?
First and foremost, don't change who you are. I mean, I know that's a simple statement, but don't take all your the things that you cherish and that you like and put them in a box and throw them under your bed, if you know what I mean. Display them, be them. That's who you are, and relish in that. That's people will accept you, and when you think that you're the only person that likes this stupid little show or this toy line, when you first go to a convention and you see it, just like Sergio said, and mine was back in 2000, it was wow. It really was. And it was a great feeling to know that you weren't the only one that really liked that, or was really ticked off that this happened in the show, or that they didn't do this just right. Because trust me, there's plenty of people that are more ticked off than you are. So, yeah, be yourself. That's my closing thought.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Daniel? Closing thought.
I always say, just do what you love. You know, been in the fandom online since its inception in 95 with Ben Yeeson's message board and ATT. I've seen guys come and go. A lot of guys come and go. A lot of guys who got into the fandom, got out of the fandom, sold their collections, you know, for various reasons. Had a baby, you know. There's people have their own ideas of what they love in life. And sometimes collecting toys was just a bridge. You know, it was just a bridge of a way to pass the time, you know, much like, oh, let's go see a movie, just pass the time. Some people it was that, but for some people it's a huge enjoyment and it's a huge part of their life. And I mean, in a lot of ways I felt Transformers for me man, like, I feel like I've done so much in relation to this hobby and the opportunities that I've gotten because of it that I would never imagine being a fan of anything else that I would have ever been able to. Like, I mean, to write comics, to help with creation of toys and decos and write bios for toys and stuff like that. The opportunities that I've gotten through that, I mean, just pushing it to the max, me enjoying this hobby and doing everything in it. Like, just do it if you love it. You know, just do it if you love it. If you don't force yourself. But always ask yourself, why are you here? And you know what? If it's because you found camaraderie, that's fine. You know, some people stay at a job because they like the people who work there. You know, some people might go to church just because it's their big social gathering. It's their only time to really talk with people. You know, worse has happened. People have stayed in things to be social. And the one good thing with this hobby, and it's like Sergio said, you know, and Brett also, when I went to my first BotCon in 2001, I geeked the hell out because I wasn't able to comprehend, and I was 17 at the time, I wasn't able to comprehend being surrounded by so many people that loved what I loved. Like, it was, you know, I thought I was just this super genius that knew everything about Transformers and everything, and here I was surrounded by tons of people that knew everything that I knew and loved what I loved. And I mean, to me, the primary thing that keeps me in Transformers is the other fans and the people that I've met through it and just the continuing. I know, like, I always feel that, I mean, I could be single, lose my house, not have a job. Like, I could lose everything in life, but I will always have Transformers in the fandom. Like, I'll always have that. I feel like that's something I could always fall back on because it's something that I feel is always there for me. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what happens in my life, that's something that's always there. So many other things could change in my life, but that has been literally the only consistent in my whole life since high school has been Transformers. And I say high school because it was like Beast Wars, much like Brett, was like when I got back in and never stopped.
Yeah. I'm going to read a comment from a listener on YouTube in the live chat. Talus says, great show, guys, and thank you for watching. Really enjoyed the topic. I'm 40 now, and it's been on my mind a lot, too. And over the years, I've gotten my fair share of negative comments from family and past girlfriends. That's why we're here as a podcast, because we know that there's people out there that are just like us and experience these things. And there has been times that each and every one of us has thought, am I the only one that feels this way? You know, am I right in feeling this way? Well, we're here to tell you that you are, and it's normal.
And the thing too, don't let the girlfriend thing damage you, because there is women that will not understand this, but just as much, and now more than ever, just as much, there is women who will understand this.
Absolutely.
So don't let, if you meet one girl and she freaking breaks your heart, don't go, that's it, I'm getting rid of the toys, I'm not going to meet no one if I keep this up. Yeah. Don't, yeah. Because I guarantee it's just one bad case. There's millions out there.
You know what I mean? I'm going to have my closing thought as simply, And we've hammered it in this episode. Don't be ashamed of what you like and who you are. There's always going to be a naysayer, no matter where you go, whether it be in your family, out in public, at your workplace, wherever. There's always going to be a naysayer, but you know it's growing and growing and growing. In that, there are people that truly understand you because they're just like you, and just like we are. We understand each other. You know, we each have different likes and dislikes from within the same fandom, from within the same hobby. Some people like comics more. Some people like the toys more. Some people like cartoons more. Hey, it's all the same. You know, we're all a fan of this great hobby. And no matter what you're a fan of, it's normal to have doubt and question things. But never, ever be ashamed of who you are, what you like, and never change because somebody else expects you to. You know, never be something that somebody else expects you to be. Be yourself. If you love Transformers and they are a part of your life, like they are mine, like there are Brett's and Daniel's and Sergio's, it's fine. It's perfectly fine. You know, and there's plenty of people out there who can prove that you can be a successful person outside of being a fan and still enjoy the hobby. You know, some people, you know, enjoy it more than others, I have to be honest. But, you know, the thing is like, you know, like right now I'm in a bad spot in my personal life. But I'm not letting it get me down, and I'm not getting out of the fandom. I'm not getting out of the hobby. I'm not stopping collecting. You know, I've got a bad jonesing right now for new Toy Joy. I need some retail therapy, but I can't. You know, I look at Maki Toy Downbeat, and I'm like, I want that so hard right now.
Third-party jazz.
Yeah, I want that so hard right now, and I can't afford it, you know. But, you know, there right now, other things are taking priority in my life, but it doesn't mean that, you know, well, toys are taking too much of my time and money, give up on it and leave. No, it's part of me, and I'm not ashamed of that, you know, and you shouldn't be either. Hope everybody's enjoyed this episode, and a lot of great discussion here, a lot of, it's been another one of those episodes where, you know, I hope everybody sees that, you know, we've got to have these every now and then. I think you guys can. We got to have these every now and then because it's a reminder, hey, this is why we do what we do. This is why we're here. You know, I love Transformers. You love Transformers. Let's play with toys. But I think we've went on along a little too long tonight. Actually, we just hit about the 2-hour mark. But hope everybody's enjoyed it and got something out of the show. Check out our sponsors, CapturePrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com and Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection while minimizing your costs at MegaToyFan.com. You can find that Mega Toy Fan at popular robot toy conventions such as TFCon this year.
Yeah.
As well
both
as...
Both of them.
Yeah. Check out our Facebook group at Facebook.com/groups/TFYLP. As well as our Patreon, which is linked down here in the video. But if you're listening to us on the audio version, it is at patreon.com/TFYLP. We're also on Twitter at TFYLP and lots of other places, and you can find those on tftalk.net, which is our home website. Hope everyone has a great week, and we'll see you next time on TFYLP. Good night, everybody.
Take it easy.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.